It's Sunday the 30th of August, the day that in 2013 Spurs signed a wonder kid called Eric Lamella. This is the 50th episode of your eSpurs podcast. Come on, you Spurs! 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 Stop them, no one can stop them. We're gonna do it like we did last year. Welcome to the podcast. If you're a first-time listener, welcome to eSpurs. We record the show each and every Sunday night throughout the season. And as we always say, if you like what you hear on the show, there's multiple ways to get in touch and stay in touch with all things eSpurs. New for this season, there's a couple of new ways to stay in touch with us. You can subscribe and follow us on YouTube and Google+. So get in touch with the gang at eSpurs. You can check out all of our links on our website. That's eSpurs.blogspot.co.uk. So they're all there for you. Tonight, we'll be looking back at the Everton game. We'll be asking, do Spurs have a transfer strategy? And if so, what is it? Previewing a tough but interesting Europa League group. Plus, in our social media debate tonight, we'll be asking how and why did it all go wrong for Kyle Walker, if indeed you think it has done. Before we start talking all things Spurs, it's time for you guys out there to start listening and do some work. We tried this out last week and it worked quite well. We've hidden the voice of a famous ex-Spur in the clip to follow. All you have to do is see if you can work out who the clip is, and we'll reveal the answer at the end of tonight's show. Here's the clip.
Oh, it's a bit of disappointment. You can't afford to sell your three best players, Defoe, Berbatov and Keane, 65 goals a season, and, you know, not replace them. They've got Pavlyuchenko. Next year he'll be a player. But, you know, he's going to need time to settle in, and Tottenham haven't got that time at the moment.
So that's the mystery Spur. Let us know if you guess who it is during the show at @e_Spurs on Twitter, and we'll read out the correct answers at the end of the show. Let's get on with introducing the gang that we've cobbled together for the show tonight. First up, we've got some very familiar voices for you, being our 50th podcast. If you're a long-time listener to the show, I'm sure you remember a couple of these voices from when we first started, way back when. First up, over in Gibraltar, it's our friend Mark Vialis. How you doing, buddy?
Hi, thanks. Congratulations to you, eSpurs, on its 50th episode.
Cheers, fantastic. Mate. I still don't know how we made it this far, but we did. And it's good to have you back on, mate. It's good to have you back on. Mark, what have you been up to since we chatted last?
Oh, well, it's been a long time, but recently I just got back from Monaco, where the Europa League draw was done. I was there representing Gibraltar as one of the 54 panelists of member associations for the European Best Footballer Award. That was quite a lavish thing, all expenses paid by UEFA. It wasn't too bad. But yeah, the Europa League draw was fantastically interesting for us Spurs, wasn't it?
It was, and as I say, Mark, a tough group. We'll come into it in more detail later on, but just sticking with the draw for a moment, if we can. This is a draw which traditionally, I remember the draws growing up as a kid, used to be, you know, 20 balls drawn from a velvet bag. It's now turned into something, isn't it, that sort of resembles the opening ceremony of the Olympics.
Well, I guess so. It is. They try to, UEFA trying to make it this really big event. And to be honest, it does seem like it's growing in stature. I mean, I overheard one of the English journalists over there on the phone calling his office, saying that he had spoken to Edwin van der Sar, and he said that these were practically Champions League draws. And to be honest, I don't disagree with him. It'll be tough to get out of this group, but it'll be a great spectacle for the fans.
Yeah,
won't it?
Spot on, mate. I mean, you look at the first group that was drawn, the Celtic and Ajax in there. You know, it's some cracking football. And as you say, you sort of got that. There's a lot of criticism of the Europa League, but you do get some of those huge clubs sort of filtering down into the next level, don't you? So that's one of the plus points.
Yeah, it is one of the plus points. Although there are some people out there who say that they don't deserve to if they've lost, if they've dropped out of a competition to go straight into another. But it does give it that more of a flashy look with those Champions League clubs coming down. And it has looked better in recent years. And the finals have been cracking finals, that's for sure. Spanish clubs are also taking it 2 years in a row. But yeah, it looks to be another good road ahead.
Certainly does. Well, listen, Mark, great to have you on, mate. And we'll talk Spurs in just a moment. And also on the show tonight, guys, another very familiar voice that you'll recognise, huge Spurs fan and founding member of the eSpurs team, it's Michael Halpas. How you doing, buddy?
Really good, thank you. Enjoying the bank holiday weekend. Thanks
no
for having me on.
No problem at all, no problem at all. And just off air there, Mike, we was talking a little bit about what you've been up to, and you've been on your travels.
I have. I've decided to do the right thing and go travelling, see a bit of Asia. I decided to do something different. I bought myself a boat to live on. Nice. So I've been working on that and working hard at work, so keeping
great
busy.
Great stuff, mate. Just very, very briefly, Mike, what have you made of the start to the season?
Not what we had hoped it would be. You would have wanted more points on the board. Thankfully, we're not too far behind. But without wishing to sound too negative, the top four hopes are quickly fading even after such a short period of time. Some positives to be taken. It looks like Poch's team is still gelling in a way. Concerned that there is a lot of expectation placed on Harry Kane, and I hope that these new forward signings are really going to hit the ground running.
Yeah, you would hope so, mate. I mean, when you look at the previous signings we've made, it's taken Eriksen aside, it's really taken all of them time to set in, if they have done at all, you know, and we can't afford to go through that again, can you? Especially when you look at Kane, he seems to, this season, the weight on his shoulders looks to be showing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's a model professional, as young as he is. He's always positive in his forward play. He's hardworking, he's very talented. I wonder whether we'd get more out of him as a number 10, but what has been apparent this season, as well as towards the end of last season, is that when he's playing up top on his own, he's getting a lot of attention from centre-halves, so it's difficult for him to get space. I mean, they're sticking to him like glue, and Poch has got to work out how best to use him. I know he drops off, but he's our main threat up front, and it's just he hasn't got any space like he did like the first two-thirds of last season. But I'd like to see him, especially when we're playing at home against at least 10 of the league teams. I know Poch has got his system, but I think, you know, we can afford to play with two up top, and it'd be nice to keep Harry just dropping back a bit as a 10, give him a bit more space. That's where he can cause trouble.
Yeah, it's an interesting debate. I was watching the build up on BT Sport yesterday to the games, and they were talking about exactly that, number 10s and the role of number 10s. And it's another interesting possibility, especially with these new attackers coming in now, you know, the option of switching players around. And maybe that is the key to unlocking the best of Kane, you know. It's an interesting one. And again, we'll come on to a lot more Spurs chat in a moment. But next up, we've got another very familiar voice that you'll recognise, I'm sure. It's the writer, and he's frequently on the social media talking all things Spurs. It's Matt Healing. How you doing, buddy?
Very happy to be back, mate. Yeah.
Good stuff, Matt. Good to have you back with us. How's the old writing going?
Yeah, it's good. I'm going to university to study creative writing, so it's all going in the right direction. Not as lavish as the other two boys, but yeah, it's all going in the right direction, early days, so I'm looking forward to it.
Great stuff, mate. Well, listen, Matt, Michael, Mark, great to have you all back on with us, and let's crack on with some Spurs chat, shall we? Yesterday, against Everton, we mentioned on the show last week, you know, it was another tough game, although having said that, Everton aren't as tough a nut to crack as they were under David Moyes. Let's go to Mark first up. What did you make of yesterday's game?
Well, I know most of us were hoping for a win there because we got home advantage and everything, but let's not forget as well, it's early days in the season, and there's no need to panic just because we didn't get the 3 points over there at home. I mean, there were big problems in our clinical play, in service, and also in finishing in that match. We lacked a killer instinct, I thought. And I think there's too much, you were mentioning earlier, I think there's too much pressure on Harry Kane to put the ball away. But most teams are going to pack their half and look to counter against us, and we need that quality in the final third, and also with those forward signings that we've had, hopefully that will change that.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be nice to see them coming in eventually. I guess what Pochettino is doing is trying to bed them in training. That can be the only reason we haven't seen them yet, you would think. A few stats from yesterday's match. We had 20 shots on goal compared to their 8, so we dominated on that front. That was evident in the game, wasn't it? 6 on target, 50-50 the possession, which is quite surprising because it seemed a lot more towards our end on the possession front. Passes completed almost exactly the same. So some stats would say that it was quite equal. But Michael, in terms of chances, we certainly had the best of those.
We did. And Howard was in inspired form yesterday. You get the feeling that had Kane's, I think it was 22nd minute when he was through 1-1, had he put that away, it would have changed the game. But I mean, Everton, no surprises, turned up to play, to be solid and get the draw first and then the win. Again, I think it was Mark who mentioned it. We're not clinical. I mean, generally speaking, not just yesterday, but we're not scoring enough goals. We can't finish teams off or close the games down. The Stoke game highlights that. But I just think, we need to be more clinical, because had City or possibly Chelsea or one of the better teams been at White Hart Lane yesterday, there's a good chance that they would have taken 3 points. So we've got to start finishing. We've got to be more clinical.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, what do you put that down to, the lack of the goals flowing at the moment? Do you put that down to squarely at the striker's feet, i.e. Harry Kane, Chadley, or would you say that it's down to the chances that are provided for them and at the moment that they're being starved of those chances? Where would you place the blame, for want of a better word, at the moment?
Well, yeah, it is sort of a blame to be placed, but it's not a particular person. I wouldn't say things that are wrong with the team, they're just things that need to fall into place. I think that maybe signing another player or integrating one of the new players into the tactics we have at the moment would really benefit us in a goal scoring way, because we don't really create enough space for the chances that are being created, if you get what I mean. Harry Kane gets chances, but he's nowhere near what the sort of chances that, say, Aguero would get, because he's not getting the quality of the chances. Let's say that, like, Son comes into the team, he might start creating and scoring more goals, but he'll also bring the quality of the chances up as well, which means that players like Harry will be able to convert goals more efficiently.
Yeah, it's. I would think, as you say, they're a knock-on effect. Once we get the players in to provide those chances, then, you know, they will come. Mark, one of the most pleasing things from yesterday's game, I thought, was the return, if you like, of Jan Vertonghen. For a while now, he's been quiet. Some would say sulky. He's been, you know, drifting in and out of games. But yesterday, we saw again that player that was inside, didn't we? We saw that Jan Vertonghen that first came to Spurs.
Yeah, those images of him ripping the shirt and the line coming out, you know, with Jan Vertonghen, the pride for the shirt, really wanting it, and then taking the game by a scruff of the neck from the back, because we need technical defenders in the way that we play. We push up the field, and Vertonghen is exactly that. He's very incisive in his forward thinking, and he reads the game well, and it's all an open playing field for him in front of him. And I think the signing of Alderweireld was a great piece of business, because he's holding his hand in the back four, and they're a happy couple. And don't they just look great?
They do. Well, they do. As if it was meant to be, isn't it? You know, it's sort of, interestingly, they play fullback, I believe, don't they, for Belgium? So it's interesting to see them at centre back, you know, and it seems to be working well so far. But another thing from yesterday that I was very impressed with, Michael, was the return of Danny Rose. He first game back in ages. We badly missed him. One of our most improved players, and it was good to see him getting up and down the wing yesterday.
Yeah, that's what he brings to the team. I think question marks still remain over how good he is as a defender. But I'm not going to point the finger at him when there's so much going on with Harry Kyle Walker on the other side of the pitch. But yeah, Danny Rose is a very positive player, loves getting forward. I think we need to get more crosses from the byline into that box. I know yesterday they played, sorry, I know you're talking about Danny Rose, but it's just on that left-hand side when Nasser Chadli's playing with his right foot, and you know what's going to happen. He's going to cut inside. We're not getting down the byline to get balls in. I don't know whether that's because Stones and Jagielka were sent off yesterday. But I'd like to see. It's nice seeing Rose getting forward, especially if Poch is going to play two in the middle in midfield, so someone can drop a lot easier. But yeah, no, nice to see. I just hope that he continues his development and his improvement, and he doesn't go the way of Kyle Walker.
Yeah, it's Kyle Walker's really, again, we'll speak about this later on the show, but he seems to have struggled really this season. But what was nice yesterday, Matt, was the central midfield pairing. I thought they did well, and I think that Mason especially was getting forward yesterday. He didn't, you know, seem to swipe at a few shots that he had, but But generally, that midfield had a decent game yesterday. Obviously, Bentaleb came in for Lamella, which I think most people would agree with. And they seemed to be more coherent yesterday.
I think the argument is 100% still there that we need a centre mid, a centre defensive mid. But you cannot argue how well the boys have done. Bentaleb aside, being shoved into their respective positions, Dyer's become a centre back over the last few games. Mason's been pushed even further up the field. But reflectively, Mason did a really, really good job. He got a lot of shots away. He really tested Howard. Maybe a couple that weren't on target, but he really filled Eriksen's boots, but obviously not to his standard. But in his own way, he'd done a really good job. I feel Dyer's coming on leaps and bounds in terms of adjusting to the position that he's in at the moment. Whether we'll see him playing there regularly for the rest of the season is yet to be seen. I'd like to see maybe him and Vimmer start in some of the smaller games at centre-back together to try and get a bit of a partnership up, because obviously, as you said earlier, Jan and Toby are really starting to form a strong centre-back pairing. But in terms of the midfield, there's work to be done, but the boys they're really coming on in leaps and bounds, and it's great to see them all progressing so well and really understanding the way the team plays a bit better.
Yeah, one thing I really like about the team is, and a player I really like in the side is Chadley. We've spoken about this quite a lot on the podcast. Mark, Chadley's had a very good season last season, scored I think 9 goals, something like that, for a midfielder isn't bad by any stretch of the imagination. He sometimes drifts in and out of games, doesn't he? And you just wish sometimes he'd be get himself involved a little bit more. What have you made of Chadley's first couple of seasons?
Yeah, the dolphin keeps coming in and out of the water, doesn't he? But I love Chadley. I think he's got everything to be a top player for us. He's strong, powerful, in the Dembele look in the way he can hold the ball, and he challenges defenders. He puts them on the back foot, and we saw that against Everton, where constantly he took the fullback. He was constantly backtracking the fullback from Chadley's assaults. You're right. He does drift in and out of games, and that's possibly down to concentration, the ebb and flow of the game, other players around him. Many factors, a partnership he may have with the fullback Danny Rose. Having said that, is a fantastic partnership, as we've seen, with Danny Rose overlapping very well. We want to see Kyle Walker doing that a bit more on the outside. Although in the first few games, Kyle Walker did do okay, showing shades of his former self. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. We
certainly will, mate. And just finally on the game yesterday, Michael, in terms of the style of football the side play, we've spoken about this again quite a lot. It's quite laboured at times, isn't it? Would you put that down to the system that Pochettino plays at home in terms of only playing one up front, making it difficult? Or would you say we need better players in there to be able to play a different style of football?
Better quality players would really help. If we had City's players in our team, that would really help. It would be, but you can see that he sticks to his philosophy rigidly. Similar to when he was at Southampton. I mean, there's a lot of knocking the ball back at times. I know we have longed for, and at a time we became accustomed to, for example, Harry Redknapp's style of play, which is much more attractive to Spurs fans. I mean, that's not what we've got. But we need to give him a bit more time and to get it all working together. I don't think there's anything wrong per se with this one up top supported by three attacking forwards or attacking midfielders. Harry Kane does it perfectly. He drops off. He's very good at assisting other people. I just think that there have been times in the last four league games where runners are getting ahead of Harry Kane and the quality's lacking. Sorry to say it, but Chadley's guilty of that. Lamella, well, no one more so than Lamella. I think, you know, if we, this and G and Son, maybe they can work in that system together. But there's clearly room for improvement. I wouldn't knock the system too much just yet, but I'd like us to, gamble's the wrong word, but I think to be more threatening, more attacking at home, I think. And again, to go back to the Stoke game, when the top teams, we're aspiring to be one of the top teams in Europe. The top teams in England and Europe don't take their attackers off at home at half-time, two-thirds into the game to protect the 2-0 lead. The Chelsea's, the United's, the City's, they go for 3 and 4 to finish a game off. And that concerned me about Poch. I wasn't impressed with that move. and I hope not to see it in future. But let's give him time. Let's give him time because he is a talented manager. Time will tell. I want to hold fire just yet. I don't want to cast blame where it's undue just yet. Let's give him time.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And I think the one thing that we've mentioned a few times and learnt from watching him is that he is still learning. You know, he's a young guy himself in management terms, and he's had a few decent seasons in football management and one pretty poor one to begin with at Espanyol, but he's still cutting his teeth in terms of the big league of the Premier League, you know, and he had that good season at Southampton. But in terms of these decisions, it's going to be decisions like those that he made against Stoke that are key to us progressing, I think, you know, whereas you mentioned there he took off our attacking.
Yeah, this is true. But at the same time, I mean, let's be as objective as possible. We haven't got the best quality players in the team. Like in the league, sorry. We haven't got, I mean, how many world-class players have we got in our team?
Well, say one.
We miss Eriksen when he's not playing. Well, Eriksen, you know, Harry Kane's on an upward trajectory. Lloris. But, you know, if you have players like Aguero and Silva or Hazard in your team, you're going to do stuff, aren't you? But we're perhaps lacking in the top quality players.
I think you made a point there, though, that we've got young players and they're all very high. Well, we have a lot of very high quality young players and we're signing more. And I understand the problem with Pochettino having maybe too rigid tactics, but that will come in time. He's, like you said, Andy, he's also a young manager. In time, it will all come together, I reckon. And they've all got high aspirations, and it's what sort of the older boys at Tottenham would say that we need. We need high aspirations. Maybe we haven't got the best team at the moment, but it's better to fail aiming high than to succeed aiming low.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. And, you know, I think you're right. I think he's, you know, I like the way he talks about the game. I like, he seems to have all of the players on side, apart from those that, you know, he's clear are not part of the club. Those that he's trying to ship out at the moment. The rest all seem to be, you know, from what we hear, all seem to be happy and behind him. It seems to be a happy camp at the moment. Let's just hope that eventually, once the system's in place, this philosophy, starts to kick in and see how it goes. One thing that might hold him back, if anything, lads, and it brings us quite nicely onto the next subject tonight, if anything is to hold him back, you would think would be this transfer strategy that the club have. Now, it's a word that's been bandied about quite a lot in recent weeks, the Spurs transfer strategy on Sky. A lot of the pundits yesterday were sort of having a pop at the transfer dealings. Mark, first up, what do you make of, because we haven't got your views on this over the past few weeks, so it'd be interesting to hear what you think. What do you think about the transfer strategy of Spurs in general under Daniel Levy?
Well, it's been beneficial in one sense, in that we haven't gone under, and we haven't joined the likes of Leeds and all these clubs that didn't have a properly financed transfer system, and the way they run the club. But we're Tottenham Hotspur. We have to aim to be in the top echelons of the Premier League, and when you look at the amount of money we've spent compared to other clubs, we should be aiming much higher than what we are. And again, we look, it's going back in history a little bit. This isn't too far, though, with the Gareth Bale money. It was a shocking, shocking number of signings which never lived up to it, and we're trying to get rid of most of them, and we got rid of a few. But now, in this season specifically, Pochettino said he wanted to do his business early. And here we are in the early days from the deadline, and we're still short in crucial positions. And is he really been backed all the way, do you think?
You know what, I think it's doubtful. I think to believe that a man like Daniel Levy would ever give up the reins to the transfers is hard to believe at best. And I think that part of the reason for getting Pochettino there was that was the understanding that Levy wouldn't let go completely. You know, I just can't imagine a manager like Ferguson or Wenger who liked total control over the transfers ever being at a club like Spurs because of that fact. And maybe that's, I don't know. And you know, to be honest, that's one of the reasons I wanted to put that question out there tonight is because pundits and journalists are going on about this at the moment, about the transfer strategy and having a pop at Spurs. So I thought it'd be interesting to hear what Spurs fans have got to say and what they feel. Michael, do you think ultimately the transfer strategy of Daniel Levy is good for Spurs or a bad thing?
What a question. The transfer strategy has varied, it would seem. It's apparent that Levy has got his fingers burnt with some of the recent acquisitions, like Soldado and Lamela. To be fair to Spurs, we've got two things going on. Number one is we need money for a new stadium. So as happens with all teams who are investing in new stadia, money needs to be diverted to that. And as well as that, one of the crucial factors affecting transfer policy is which European tournament you're participating in. We can't attract the top draw players because we're not in the Champions League. So there needs to be some other kind of strategy. As I said, I think they're wary of going down the route of just chasing people like Lamela and Soldado. You can see what his transfer policy is. Buy them young, buy them relatively cheap, and then we can flog them in the future or hope to keep them and they can assist the team. This is the way it's going to be for the short term. And we just have to get on with it, I'm afraid. We're not going to sign the big boys unless we're in the Champions League. And we can only hope that the Spurs scouting network is more proficient than it has been in recent seasons, and that some of these guys, these relative unknowns, are actually going to pay off. But I personally don't expect, we're not going to be signing the big boys. We're never going to be in the market for Raheem Sterling at 49 million, for example. So we have to find another way around. I know he is trying to go after young players to get value for money. But at the same time, it's nice to have a sprinkling of more mature, experienced, seasoned professionals in the side. And we do have a relatively young average age. That's the only thing I'd say on that. But just have to hope that they have unearthed some real quality talent and that they can push us up the...
Yeah, you'd hope so. Matt, we're told that Paul Mitchell has this mythical black box that, produces stats on the best players in the world. Yeah, it's called Football Manager. What do you make of the signings under Pochettino have been a little bit odd, haven't they, in terms of you've got the likes of Yedlin, who hasn't featured at all, Wimmer, who hasn't featured at all, and then there's Trippier, who's yet to get in the team. You would think he would come into play soon. What have you made of it so far this season?
You're right. There have been a lot of, mystery signings where there was a lot of high expectation, and then they disappeared. Yedlin completely befuddles me. I presumed he would have started playing semi-regularly when he first came to the club, but it was never to be. I think that more recently there have been a few signings that have maybe made sense a bit more. I think the Trippier will start playing soon with the way Walker's going. But I think we're going in the right direction in terms of signing young players. I understand that maybe having one of the youngest squads in the league isn't a great thing. You won't be able to win anything with kids, as everyone always says. But at the point we are, in terms of where the club is, this may be a good time to have such a young manager, such young players, in this time leading up to the stadium. And people forget that the next 3-4 years are going to go by super quick. We may have a completely different team, but in that time, the players that are going to be key for us in the next 4 to 5 years are the ones who are coming up now, or the ones we're going to buy now, the young players. And as they all develop together and get to know each other better, the team will play better, Pochettino will learn more, and then by the time the stadium opens, in God knows when, we might have a team that's really, really ready to start pushing. But people got to understand that we're in very early stages, but it's exciting. We should all be really excited about where the club is at the moment in terms of maybe not our transfer policy, but the kind of player we're bringing in, the breed of player. People immediately started complaining about Son as soon as he came in. But I think that the way some of the people who watch the Bundesliga talk about him, that he's a really exciting player. We should look forward to him. Maybe we get a couple more in, maybe we don't. But I think at the moment we've got a really young squad, a really promising squad. We've got a lot of promising players out on loan. And I think in the next few years, we could develop into a real force, especially with the stadium and with the manager we've got. We could start developing into a big, big club.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get back, up to... You would think it's going to be very, very tough to ever challenge the likes of Chelsea or Man City, wouldn't you, without a sort of sugar daddy, so to speak. But it'd be nice to put us back up in that big league of challenging for the top four again, which I think this season, next season, we all pretty much agreed is unrealistic, you know, and that's fair enough because we've got to build again due to transfer policy or due to, you know, changing manager. So we are where we are, and it's nice to have that stadium on the horizon, because if that's, you know, if we didn't have that stadium on the horizon at the moment, it might not look so appealing. But there we are. Mark, just finally on the transfer front, I want to ask you about policy of leaving transfers until deadline day, which is a regular occurrence for Spurs. We've now played, what, four games into the season. We've picked up a couple of points. Do you think the transfer policy affects that? And when you compare it to someone like, for example, Liverpool, they did all of their business early, didn't they? They're not in Europe, but they made some fairly, you know, what you would think would be decent signings, although yesterday's result would maybe suggest otherwise. Do you think that policy of deadline day deals affects the team in a negative way?
Well, there's a big debate in football now, isn't it? And with these deadline day sagas, the way Sky Sports News portrays it, and with the, even wearing with the yellow tie, everything has to go together, very flashy, and it works to the advantage of perhaps some clubs, and maybe perhaps it works to the advantage of Levy's mentality in the sense that he can get the best deal. But the other side of the debate is that, it, as you were saying, it ruins these early crucial stages as the season kicks off. And teams are left short-handed in the last minute, especially those smaller clubs. With us, we're trying to get Berainho, and in the last minute, it's been a long-running transfer saga, we know this. But the clubs, they know that these deals are going on beforehand. They are in contact. It's done by email. It's not like they come in the last minute and say they know this. It's when they really make the move in the last minute, you know. So my argument is, as you say, with Liverpool doing all their business early, is that we could genuinely do our business early if we had a change in mentality. That's for us. But it's a bigger debate in football where it affects smaller clubs. Look at like with West Brom and teams in this level, and even for in lower leagues and in other European leagues, it's a big issue.
Yeah, I agree, and I'm yet to hear still one good argument as to why the transfer window doesn't close, you know, before the start of the European League season. I mean, Michael, can you think of one reason to keep this window open so late?
What are the benefits? The benefits are you kick off a campaign and you get a player suffering a serious injury that's going to keep him out for 6 months, 12 months, and you need replacements. The other main one, I suppose, is that you play a couple of games and you only know what you're really missing or what you need to add to your side when you see in competitive games how your team is performing. What else would there be? I can't really think of any other justification.
No,
for
I mean it's putting you on the spot. It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because I agree with you, the injury factor there. You would think maybe that's why they introduced the winter window, possibly. But I, you know, can see your point completely there. It's just a tricky one, isn't it? And I think to the frustration of manager, I think most managers would prefer their squad to be settled at the start of the season. And it just seems to cause more disruption. And as Mark says, it almost becomes farcical, doesn't it? You know, tomorrow night we're going to have Jim White sitting there with a yellow tie on, you know, and cameras all over the place. It becomes almost a circus, doesn't it? When you would think the business should all be done now, squad settled and on with the season. But there we are. Maybe that's one of the reasons we love it so much. Maybe, you know, we're suckers for the deadline day. It's almost like a seasonal thing now, isn't it? You know, that we all get worked up about and annually disappointed about. So, you know, I don't know. I can see both sides of the argument on that one. Just to do a bit of a straw poll, we'll go around the table on this one. I think Michael's already given his answer. But Mark, yes or no, Spurs transfer policy, is it a success?
If it's just a one word,
okay,
no.
Fair enough. And Matt?
Yeah,
okay.
It is.
So pretty split on that one. I think that reflects much of the fan base at the moment. So your answer is we haven't got a clue either. And on to the next subject, lads. We're going to talk about the Europa League draw, which was made in Monaco during the week. And I tell you what, I'm quite happy with this one. I would much rather we get an interesting, tough group like this than be playing Thursday night games against teams that we've probably, with respect to them, we've probably never heard of. And you know, I would much rather play the Anderlecht and Monacos of this world and have a real test. Let's get the lads' thoughts on it. Let's go to Mark first up. Mark, well, I mean, you was there. So what did you make of the Spurs group?
Yeah, I thought it was the most exciting group in that draw. I mean, Tottenham, Anderlecht, Monaco and Karabakh. Yep. Am I saying that right? Yeah, I mean, it was a great roar from the audience there when Monaco was drawn, being the home crowd. The prince was there for the draw, and I'm sure it was mentioned on TV as well, if you guys were following. And Anderlecht are the best side in Belgium. They're steeped in tradition. They have some great players, as we all know, who have come from there and are now playing their trade in the Premier League. And we could see another group of young future talents, Belgian talents, that we may be keeping an eye on as well. And Monaco, we've been also, like, in a transfer sense, looking at their squad. So who knows? Maybe it's a good chance to make some contacts for the January transfer window. I mean, Martial is a fantastic player. I mean, I follow the French league loosely, and he's an absolutely explosive talent. And if we got our hands on that guy, I tell you, I mean, our front line would be devastatingly fantastic.
You never know. There's still 48 hours to go, Mark, so you never know. I'd get on the phone to Levy, see what you can do, mate. Never know. Michael, would you rather a relatively easy group, as it, again, with respect, as it has been in previous years, or are you in favour of these sort of groups where you come up against some of the top European teams at this stage?
I just want to get through. I want to, you know, the priority is the Premier League, so you want to exhaust your players as little as possible during the European games, so that you're as fresh as possible for the weekend. We, as you all know, we struggle on weekends following Europa League evenings. So I prefer as easy group as possible, because I think, regardless, Spurs are one of the stronger teams in the tournament at present, and you expect that it's a given that Spurs are going to qualify from the group. I wouldn't accept anything less than qualifying from this group, would you?
You would hope so. I mean, I think it's going to be a lot tougher than it has in previous years, I would think. But I sort of embrace that. I want to see our team tested. You know, I want to see us up against the best teams in Europe. And don't get me wrong, I love the Europa League. I love, you know, what it stands for in Spurs history. But some of those Thursday night games, crikey, they're hard work, aren't they? You know, to get through on in previous years. And it will be nice to see those European nights at the Lane against the likes of Anderlecht and Monaco. You know, what great nights they'll be. It'd be interesting to see. I tell you what, Matt, would you expect, bearing in mind that we've got some good teams in there, would you expect Pochettino to stick with putting the kids in, or would you expect a lot stronger side to enter the competition this year?
That is a very tough one. One that I think properly only he'll be able to answer, because he's got a track record, Pochettino, of being sort of against the Europa League as a competition. But this year, we've got a really good mix of teams in that group. Monaco, they're one of the closest teams you're going to get to a Champions League team that are playing in the Europa League this season. Anderlecht, they're obviously a fantastic team. I really like Youri Tielemans. We were talking about Martial earlier. I really like Tielemans. I think they've got a really good squad. Karabag, I've absolutely no idea who they are. I know they play in the Azerbaijani League. I think they're top at the moment. They'll want to give us a game. And I think that Pochettino, hopefully he'll understand that a bit more this season. Lest we forget, we had some really good nights there last season in the Europa League. Lamella, Soldado a couple of times, Harry Kane. I think that maybe this season it might hit him that this is a competition the fans are quite excited for, and it would be good to see us go far in it, if not win it, because we have the quality to win it. Whether or not he'll want to risk the amount of games that we'd have to play to get there or not, I don't know. But it's a good competition to be in, I think. And to be in a strong group to start off with is better, to get the guys in gear for the competition.
Yeah, I agree. And Mark, with the Europa League, we've just mentioned there that it is winnable. And I think even though we're not as strong maybe as we have been in previous years in terms of depth of our squad, you know, I think it's realistic to think that Spurs will have a good run in the competition. Bearing that in mind, would you prioritise the Europa League over the Premier League? I mean, we've already said on the show that top four is not realistic this season, and bearing in mind the investment that Liverpool have made in their team compared to ours, would you therefore prioritise Europa League over Premier League, or would you say, no, you stick with the Premier League in terms of the full-strength team that we enter?
I think there has to be a balance here, because it's not just about bleeding the youngsters as well. It's about, we also have fringe players who could use those games, and similar to cup competitions in the league. This is this, I'm strictly speaking about the group stages, a chance to get those fringe players fighting for those first team places and pushing our first team players to perform even better. Look at what Harry Kane did in the Europa League last year, and what that led to. I mean, who knows if that could happen with Pritchard or with any of our other youngsters, you know? And I think we have to see how it goes. If we lose, if we go into our first few matches and we have shocking results, lose our first two or three matches, which I really hope that doesn't happen. But if that were to happen, then maybe the priority might change. But I have a feeling that Pochettino has already has in his mind how he's going to approach a competition. And the draw, I don't think, would have changed his approach.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what he does go with. Just looking at some of the other groups, lads, we've got Ajax and Celtic in there, as Mark mentioned. Liverpool, Rubin Kazan, Bordeaux and Sion. Borussia Dortmund are in there this year. You've got the likes of Marseille are in there, Lazio. So some strong sides in there again. And of course, you've got this problem or you know, system of the Champions League teams coming into it halfway through a competition, which, you know, I'm sure we've all got our own thoughts on. But it'd be interesting to see anyway. Lads, we're going to move on to the last subject tonight because time's quickly running out. We asked everybody on social media, as always, and we normally put out a social media question on a Sunday night and to get your views for the show. Tonight's question was, what has happened to Kyle Walker, basically? When he first came to Spurs, one of my favourite players, getting up the wing, fast, attacking. Has it all gone wrong for you in terms of Kyle Walker, the player? And if so, what has happened?
Has it all gone wrong? I think there's elements of his game that in, what is it, 3, 4, 5 years, he hasn't improved on, which again is always surprising given that your day job is to play football. I said this last season, you know, if he's listening, I don't mean any disrespect. He's not the smartest, and you can see that he's just not the smartest, which isn't great when you're a defender. Some of you might think I'm going over the top here, but I wouldn't class him as a Premier League quality defender. I think his blistering pace is his main quality. He's probably the fastest fullback in the league. No winger's going to outpace him. But he's a liability. He makes mistakes. He switches off. It's nice to see, to take a positive, it's nice to see when he knocks a ball past someone, which he should do more of, and gets into a forward position. However, he seems to panic when he comes up. He'll knock the ball forward 10 yards and then someone will come and pressure him, and then he panics a bit. But I just think defensively, he's not on the ball all the time. He makes mistakes. I don't need to say about the own goal against United, but he'll make a mistake. He'll lose the ball. And time and time again, this is season after season, he'll go and foul the player from behind and give away unnecessary free kicks. So he's a liability. And his defending hasn't improved much at all.
Yeah, it seems that way, doesn't it? It seems as if he's sort of regressing a little bit. When you consider that he was, you know, on the fringes of getting into the England team and establishing himself there. Let's just get some of the responses from the guys on Twitter. Nathan Turner says the injury that had him out 2 seasons ago caused a problem. He lost focus and desire, and rumours that other clubs wanted him. His ego was too big. Jake says after his injury, he never got back to the player he was. So a couple there think the injuries he's been his problem. Martin Hendry says performance yesterday was the best in a while. Still prone to lapses of concentration. I'm not too sure he had a great game yesterday, but fair enough. Nick says he had severe abdominal injury. That could have been the problem and his confidence was knocked. top of the tree. His answer is plain and simple. He's just not good enough, period. That was his explanation. Matt Ford says he got too big for his boots after one decent season. Gets caught out of position more than any other fullback. So, Mark, it seems that the general feeling on the social media is that it's a bit of injury and a little bit of him thinking he's better than he actually is.
Yeah, a lot of good points there. I mean, and a lot of contributing factors which are true, I would say. But Walker, as I was saying in the beginning of the pod, I think he has all the raw attributes to be a really top player. I mean, when he was at his best, he was comparable to how Bale was progressing on the left-hand side. And maybe this is a bit outlandish, but maybe some people were thinking maybe he could become a right winger at the time. But then he was stifled with the injury, and we got to think as well. At his best, I think we had Aaron Lennon, was it, yeah, on the right, who was contributing in the defensive areas at a very high standard. And even though I agree with you, Andy, and you're saying that I don't think he had the best game against Everton, but with Dembele on the right, he has a little bit more of a defensive outlook, in the sense that he can track a runner much better than someone like Lamela. And maybe that helped Walker a little bit, but it's still those recurrent lapses of concentration that sees him all the time trying to scramble back, trying to make do with his, trying to recover from his error using his pace. And you can't do that at the top level, because top performers are just going to slot the ball away.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you see the improvement that Rose has made, I think that shows him up even more, doesn't it? You know, having Rose on the other side and the leaps and bounds that Rose has made just highlights, if anything, his deficiencies. Matt, just finally on the Kyle Walker situation, one comment we've had from Golden Knee says he used to play well in a partnership with a right-footed winger, which is, you know, the comment Mark was just making. Strange he doesn't raid down the right like Rose does on the left. Do you think there's a possibility, or is it an option, do you think, pushing Kyle Walker further forward in the way that we move Bale? Would that ever be an option, do you think?
That is a tough one, because he hasn't really shown signs of being a top-quality attacker. I mean, he does make good, powerful runs up the right-hand side, but whether he could become a fully-fledged winger or not is a completely different question. In comparison to the wingers we have at the moment, I think the way Lamela's playing, he could easily be our right winger there. But I think Dembele, he's not taking Dembele out of the team. I don't think that Kyle Walker can be a right winger. I think that maybe in time he could, but I think it's got to that point where he's just gone too far off the deep end in terms of his lack of development. There was a point where he looked so promising when he won, like, Young Player of the Year and stuff like that. There was a point where he did look really promising. And the comments on Twitter is sort of a mixture of how I feel, in that once he got injured, the confidence combined with the injury led to a lack of progression. And then he stayed that way because he had no real competition. But I think his only route is to be a right back. But until we free up that right wing space, then I think that's his position, or until he gets pushed out of the team by Trippier. I think maybe in time, if we do get rid of a couple of players in that position, that if Pochettino feels it's right for him, then he could play there, because he's a strong guy. If he gets his mind right, there's room for improvement, and maybe he can improve his game a bit. But I think there may be something there still in Kyle Walker, and I think maybe in time, once he's got used to the competition, the quality competition he's got now, maybe someone will come out of him, and maybe he'll show whether or not it's a right winger that is his best position, or a right back. But only time will tell with Kyle Walker.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that optimistic number, we'll leave it there, lads. Listen, we're out of time. It's been a great show. Been a great catch up. Been good to speak to Mark and Michael and catch up on what they've been up to. Mark, Michael, Matt, cheers for coming on, lads.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter at @E_Spurs, on the Facebook at @E_Spurs page. All of the social media stuff's pretty busy every day, so there's loads of stuff to catch up with on there. If you listened to the clip earlier on the show, the famous voice that you heard was Graham Roberts, so well done if you got that right. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time, not next week, guys, because, of course, the international break, love it or loathe it, is here with us, so we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Other than that, guys, have a great week. Here's to the next 50 shows. goes, and come on you Spurs.